Hello, and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. As always, thank you for coming to listen to me. If you're new, just joining us for the first time, welcome. There we go, that's done with. For the rest of you who are coming back, thank you for coming back. You know, I always do appreciate that. So, what's going on here? Japan just had a momentous election. They booted out the ruling party that's been in charge for pretty much 50 years, and they put in a new party, which there are some that would have it that there's really not that much difference between them, but even just a name change on the letterhead is still pretty impressive for this country. So everyone is talking about it. Everyone's interested in seeing what's going to happen. They're making a lot of promises. You know, get all the highways toll-free within 4 years, free high school tuition for students, more money for parents with children and things like that. A lot of very ambitious plans. Don't know where they're going to get the money for it, but isn't that true of everything? So we wish them all the best of luck. And what else? Today, I discovered very good news that Mad Men has been picked up for season 4. There we go, which is rather early, because I remember last time my brother got the news around Christmas time, and this season, the Emmy Awards haven't even aired yet, and they've already picked it up for a fourth season. So I'm guessing the folks over at AMC either have unshakable faith in this program to continue to live up to its standards, which are very good this season, by the way, or they know something we don't. So there we go. And I am now not the only one of my family doing a podcast. My sister is actually doing radio. She's been working with WNPR for a while in Connecticut, and now she's got a hot new gig as the co-hostess or the voice of reason on the new Colin McEnroe show on WNPR in Connecticut. So if you live in Connecticut or near Connecticut or around Connecticut, you want to be listening to WNPR. I think it's around 1 p.m., 1 in the afternoon that they do a show every day. So listen to them. It's very funny, good for laughs, and you can listen to my sister and her dulcet tones. And because my sister is basically the reason that this podcast exists, I'm pimping her show. You can probably find it on iTunes. Look for Colin McEnroe or WNPR.org. Not hard to find. But enough of that. You know, I've done all my plugs. I've done all my pimping. Anything else I can think of? No. So let us get on to this week's book. Like I said, last week I gave you a clue. I said the Hayden Planetarium in the American Museum of Natural History in New York City and spaghettification. Those are your clues. I got several guesses. They were all correct. My sister actually was the first guesser, and she got it right. That it was a book by Neil deGrasse Tyson, in this case, Death by Black Hole. So, congratulations, Kion. Yes, some people can pronounce your name properly. And you will be getting a big old basket of appreciation and joy. So, enjoy that. Anyway, for the rest of you, Death by Black Hole by Neil deGrasse Tyson. Now, I have often lamented the passing of my favorite popular scientist, Carl Sagan, by talking about how necessary he is right now. We are at a point in our history where scientific illiteracy is growing, where people are not only ignorant of how science works, but are proud of their ignorance. What we need these days is someone who can reach the majority of Americans who are not especially scientifically literate, the people whose automatic reaction to science is to think, that's just too hard for me to deal with. You know those people. So enter Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's an astrophysicist and the director of the Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. There we go. He's appeared on countless television shows, including The Daily Show and Colbert Report, my favorites, to talk about the current state of astronomy and astrophysics. He's an engaging and entertaining man who claims that Pluto was asking for its demotion, which puts him on my bad side a bit, but he seems to take perverse pleasure in describing all the terrible ways the universe could take us out. I think I'd like to see him and Phil Plait get together and just come up with worst-case scenarios ever. That would be awesome. He knows that we're in a precarious position here on Earth, and he revels in it rather than just worrying about it like the rest of us. So whereas Sagan seemed to come from the point of view that the universe was a place of infinite wonder, where one could look anywhere and be awed and humbled, Tyson's attitude is more of the universe as an infinite theme park, a place where you could see your electrons stripped from your body, watch gas clouds larger than our own solar system collide and ignite, or see planets crumple under cosmic bombardment. Tyson's universe is an adventure, as big as it gets. This book is a collection of essays that Tyson wrote for Natural History magazine over a 10-year period on a variety of subjects related to science and scientific inquiry. In many ways, it's similar to every other pop science book out there, and there are so very many of them, but it's his perspective and it's his voice that makes this one stand out from the crowd. He's grouped his essays into 7 sections, on topics ranging from the difficulties inherent in actually knowing anything about the universe, to the understanding of how life went from little mindless bacteria to wee clever Homo sapiens, to the intersection of science and religion. Most of it is accessible to the average non-scientist, though he does get a little technical at points, but he understands that, and he tries to compensate for the fact that, by and large, the public is intimidated by real science. In the essay entitled Over the Rainbow, he discusses this particular challenge by using spectroscopy as an example. In spectroscopy, astrophysicists look at the spectrum of a star, hunting for telltale dark lines that indicate the physical properties. It's like looking at a rainbow with bits blackened out as though the CIA had gotten to it first. Those black lines contain all the vital information about that star's composition and, more importantly, its speed. Very little can be gleaned by just looking at the star, as it turns out. He notes there are 5 levels of abstraction, starting from level 0, which is the star itself. Then we have level 1, a picture of a star. Level 2, light from the picture of a star. Level 3, a spectrum from the light from the picture of the star. Level 4, patterns of lines lacing the spectrum from the light from the picture of the star. And then level 5, shifts in the patterns of lines in the spectrum from the light from the picture of a star. These descending levels of abstraction can apply to any branch of science, not just astrophysics. The challenge, as he notes, is getting people past level 1, which is easy to understand, but not the level at which true science is done. It's up to education, he says, and educators, to help make people comfortable with looking at real science and not just pretty pictures. Indeed, there are several sections of the book dedicated to the intersection between science and the public, which is, you know, his job. He talks about how easily we're baffled by numbers. You know, for example, why aren't below-ground numbers in a parking lot or a department store, why aren't they labeled -1, -2, -3? Huh? And how casually we disregard actual scientific facts. He brings up some of his favorite moments in bad movie science, and how he single-handedly saved Titanic, the movie, not the ship, from ignominious astronomical shame. At least on his DVD re-release, he did. He addresses the historically shifting centers of science in human history, how things like NASA are truly a global endeavor. And without the discoveries made through history by people all over the planet, from England to Greece to Baghdad, there would be no NASA, nor any science that we recognize. And to assume that the United States will always be the center of scientific inquiry is to willfully ignore history. And of course, there is a section dedicated to the conflict between religion and science, a never-ending battle that's existed since science began. Tyson believes there can be no common ground between the two. Science relies on facts. Religion relies on faith. This is not to say one is better than the other, any more than, say, a hammer is better than a screwdriver. It's just you can't use them interchangeably. And he points out that becoming a scientist doesn't require you to give up your faith. There have been, and still are, countless scientists who are believers in the divine. It's just that most of them know enough not to confuse science and spirituality. The place where they meet, historically, is on the boundary of ignorance. Isaac Newton, having figured out gravity, couldn't quite work out how you could have a multiple body system like our solar system without the whole thing falling into chaos. His conclusion? God must, from time to time, step in to keep things on the right path. Having done that, Newton went on to do other things, and it wasn't until the next century that Pierre-Simon Laplace, if I got that right, said he wasn't satisfied with Newton's insert God here argument and did the math for himself. In other words, God is a marker on the boundaries of ignorance, and the best of us are tempted to let him answer the questions that we can't. To do so, however, impedes the path of science and stops progress in its tracks. What if Newton had said, no, I'm not going to, no, 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 I'm going to figure this thing out? Would we be a century ahead in our technology now? Maybe, maybe not. What if the Catholic Church had listened when Galileo said, "The Bible tells you how to go to heaven, not how the heavens go"? Might more progress have been made? So many thinkers have come up to the boundaries of their knowledge and, humbled by what they do not know, choose to allow the God of the gaps to reassure them. But that's the whole point of science, and it's what this book and others like it are trying to instill in people. The unknown is not horrible, it's not terrifying, and it's not a place to just stop. It's a place of awe and wonder and bafflement and opportunity. To say, "Oh, I don't understand it, it must be God," is shortchanging ourselves and our heirs out of even greater knowledge of the universe. As you can tell, I get a little excited about this kind of thing. So let me leave you with a quote, as always. Tyson says, "Scientists cannot claim to be on the research frontier unless something baffles them. Bafflement drives discovery." So that is Neil deGrasse Tyson in Death by Black Hole. I've been having discussions with people about science and what science regards as useful endeavors. And some people think that science will disregard things that it cannot explain. I was discussing parapsychology. And there are reasons why parapsychology doesn't get the attention that many people think it should. One, of course, it doesn't pay off very well. There's that. Two, of course, many scientists automatically believe parapsychology can't be done. Therefore, why waste time doing it? Scientists, unfortunately, are very human, and scientists make very human mistakes. But science is self-correcting. That's one of the beauties of it. And what we ignore or pass off in this generation will be figured out by the next. So I'm not really all that worried. Anyway, that is Neil deGrasse Tyson and Death by Black Hole, a fantastic book. Very, very good. I highly recommend it. So as for next week, let's go from science to science fiction and threats from the sky, but not the big, nasty, laser, death ray dealing threats from the sky. The very, very tiny, kill us without even noticing them threats from the sky. That will be next week's book. It's kind of a vague clue, I know. I felt that the last few might have been a little easy. I don't know. All right, I'm feeling pity on you guys. Just stop looking at me like that. God, the big eyes. All right, look, all right. One more clue. This book has been made into a movie twice. First time good, second time bad. That's all I'm giving you now. So with that, thank you as always for coming by. Thank you for listening. You can always get in touch with me. I've got email and Twitter and Facebook and all that other good stuff. And I just crave attention and praise. So drop me a line. But until then, I will see you next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelabyrinthlibrary.blogspot.com, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you'd like to recommend, I'd be happy to hear it. If you would like to send me some email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes or become a fan on Facebook. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week, and until then, keep reading.